potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Like a Boss, Underwater, and 1917, plus a look at the award's favorite, Parasite. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Joker. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Leading off the news, I'd like to remind everybody to watch the Critics' Choice Awards on Sunday, January 12th at 7 p.m. on the CW. This is, of course, one of the organizations that I actually get to vote in. And you've heard me talk about a lot of my favorite movies over the past year, and you've heard me kind of sound off about award season. We'll get to see if some of my favorites, like Jojo Rabbit or The Lighthouse, get any sort of award love. And also we'll see what happens with something like The Irishman, which actually leads the nominations in the film awards. And we'll see if that can pull off any wins. It's a crowded field, and I'm curious to see where all the voters in this organization go. I mean, I know what I voted for, but we'll see what happens when they vote. So we'll talk a little bit more about that next week after those awards come through. And of course, next week, we have Oscar nominations coming out on Monday mornings, like right after the Critics' Choice Awards. So this whole week is a big award film week. Speaking of which, the Golden Globe Awards were just this last Sunday. And a lot of people look at them as a precursor for the Oscars, and they work to a degree. They're not 100%. And one of the big reasons why the Golden Globes are a little bit iffy, and I talked about that last week, is they split some of their categories into drama versus comedy or musical. And because of that, you get two best actors, two best actresses, and two best pictures. Now, what's interesting is 1917 won Best Picture and Best Director. And the Best Director's kind of a better tell because there's only one category of Best Director. But Sam Mendes won for that. And that's interesting because you really haven't seen or heard a whole lot of buzz about 1917. It's getting a ton now going into the weekend. I mean, I briefly spoke about it at Christmas, but it hadn't come out wide yet. So we're going to cover it again this week. This is one now to watch to see what happens in the Oscars and even in the Critics' Choice Awards, because who knows, it may actually win. It's nominated for those as well. So we'll see what happens, because we don't have any one movie just kind of gobbling up all the awards. You always have those movies that get 10 or more nominations, but when it comes down to actually winning the stuff, now a lot of people were saying, hey, keep an eye on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that won enough stuff during the Golden Globes, but a lot of those were in that comedy slash musical section. It's the drama stuff that tends to do better at something like the Oscars. I mean, forget the fact. I mean, I know Bohemian Rhapsody did well recently, but generally the dramas tend to work better for the Oscar audiences. And we'll also look to see if they spread those nominations around. There really isn't a foregone conclusion of something winning everything, like, you know, when stuff like Titanic was out or something like that. It's also interesting to note that Renee Zellweger won Best Actress for Judy. Joaquin Phoenix won Best Actor for The Joker, which, of course, bodes well for him in Oscars and even the Critics' Choice Awards. But like I said, there's no real front runner, and there wasn't a whole lot of wins in terms of the streaming services for the movie side of the Golden Globes. I'm curious to see if the streaming services will do better in the Critics' Choice and how that propels into Oscars. So these are some interesting things to watch as we go through this kind of last month or so of award films. Now, the other piece of news I want to hit really quickly is Scott Derrickson, who directed Doctor Strange and is set to direct the Doctor Strange sequel, which is meant to be much more of a horror film. He has bowed out of that as director. He's still going to be an executive producer, so he's still going to be involved. Now, this, of course, always, whenever you get a director being changed in a project like this, it causes ripples through the community. It causes ripples in the news for the entertainment news. The reason why I wouldn't get too worried about this is we've seen this happen before with Marvel movies. We saw this happen when Edgar Wright bowed out of Ant-Man, and when it was clear that Joss Whedon wasn't going to come back and direct any more Avengers movies. That's okay. It's okay to see that because, and I've been saying this about Star Wars, is Kevin Feige and the people at Marvel are still holding control over this. And yeah, maybe you wouldn't get as interesting of a movie. Maybe if you kind of let Scott Derrickson really go down a rabbit hole, you could have gotten a really interesting movie, but it would not have served the Marvel brand. And that's okay. That's Marvel's property. Let Marvel do what it wants to with it. And I'm sure Scott Derrickson's going to be working on something else that's weird and crazy. I mean, he did that movie Sinister, which was such a great film, at a time when horror movies were really kind of stumbling because of found footage. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first of the trailers I want to hit really quickly is Birds of Prey, opens on February 7th.
This all started when the Joker and I broke up. It was completely mutual.
So quiet.
Now that I cut ties with Mr. J, I'm about to learn that a lot of people want me dead.
And so peaceful.
But it turns out I wasn't the only dame in Gotham looking for emancipation.
You fall in love.
Couple things to note about this. First of all, if you actually watch the trailer, you hear that big explosion. It appears in this trailer that Harley Quinn, 86's The Joker, who was played, of course, by Jared Leto, much to many people, including my chagrin, in the movie Suicide Squad. If there's anything that this movie, Birds of Prey, tells us, it shows that DC said, okay, let's take what worked in this movie, which was Harley Quinn, and let's jettison everything else. First of all, I'm thrilled to see that version of the Joker gone. Even though Joaquin Phoenix isn't necessarily canon for this story, I'd rather see a good portrayal of him than that awful grill-wearing, tattooed-faced Joker that we had with Jared Leto. That was just simply awful, terrible, had no presence in a Batman film, or even Batman-adjacent film. The other thing about this is I've heard people grumble about this, saying this looks terrible or whatever. You know what? Here's the thing. I got to be honest with you. I want to see this movie. And I want to see this movie because it's got Harley Quinn running around in hot pants. That speaks to me. I'm a huge Margot Robbie fan. I think she's a great actress, but she's also gorgeous. And it's funny, I was talking about this to a radio show host in relation to the movie Bombshell, where, of course, she was playing one of the people who were allegedly sexually harassed and abused by Roger Ailes. And they were saying, oh, you're leering at her just as Roger Ailes does in the movie. I'm like, yeah, but it's in a theater and I'm by myself and I'm in a trench coat and nobody's around me. My whole point being is, let's not deny the fact that there's a certain aesthetic appeal to Margot Robbie and the character of Harley Quinn. And I'm okay watching that on a screen for 2 hours. So I'm still looking forward to this movie. The next one I want to hit really quickly is The New Mutants, which opens on April 3rd.
This isn't a hospital. It's a cage.
It's important we find out your power so we can help you get better.
I saw something I don't think she wanted me to see. We're here to get better.
I think this is the second trailer I've played for them. I think I've played a trailer several months ago. I'm real interested in this movie because it's an X-Men adjacent film. It's a good sense into seeing what Disney's going to be doing with the X-Men property. And the fact that they didn't kill it shows that they still want it out there. And I think Disney was happy with that because I think they're ready to reboot the X-Men series completely, which I'm okay with. In the Marvel Universe, you kind of want to pull them into the giant full-blown property. I like the interconnected storyline. So this also looks like it's going to be playing more like a horror movie than an actual action movie, which is great. I'm curious to see where this goes, and I'm somewhat optimistic because it looks like it might be one of the better X-Men, serious X-Men movies, not including Deadpool, but one of the better X-Men movies we've had lately. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be revisiting 1917 and talking about Parasite. Hey, 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 hey. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. You know, before we start into the movie reviews, I do have to give a welcome to one of our newest affiliates, and that is in North Central Massachusetts, the local news talk station WGAW 1340. If you are in North Central Massachusetts area, just turn your crank to 1340 AM and you'll be able to hear me. It's in Gardner, Massachusetts. Welcome, new affiliate, and we are glad to have you aboard. Now let's jump into the movie reviews. And the first one I want to touch on is, I actually covered this back at Christmas, but there were so many movies coming out at Christmas and it was just in this limited release. Cause also this week, Just Mercy comes out. I covered that a little more extensively. I didn't have a whole lot of time for 1917. So I said, I'll just bump it to January 10th because this is when it goes wide. Two soldiers in World War I are sent to the front lines to stop an attack from happening in which they are terribly outnumbered.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion.
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you fail, it will be a massacre.
We've got orders to cross here.
That is the German front line.
Hold back!
If we're not clever about this, no one will get to your brother.
Like I said, this is interesting to talk about right now, not just because it opens this weekend, but because it just won the Golden Globe for Best Picture and Best Director. I can't remember what it picked up at. I don't have the list in front of me, but those are the big ones. Those are the important ones. And those are the ones that you're going to see plastered all over movie screens and in trailers and on posters and on the DVD cover box. And the reason that's also important is this is right before the Oscar nominations. This is right before the Critics' Choice Awards are awarded. The winning the Golden Globe doesn't necessarily affect anybody's voting for it, but what I think it shows is that there was a lot of love for this movie, and rightfully so, because it's an incredibly well-made movie. The gimmick, and I use that term loosely, but it's a gimmick. The whole sort of catch to the film is it is shot as if it's one take. Now, if you know what you're doing, if you've watched enough movies, you can tell where the breaks are. You can tell where the edits are. I mean, it's not as clunky as something like Rope, where they didn't have digital effects to hide it. But it's one of those one-take movies. And unlike Rope, which all takes place in a single room, or something like Silent House was all taking place in basically this haunted house, this goes across the countryside. So it's epic, and it is masterful, and it is ambitious. Now, with the one-take structure, you do sometimes stumble a bit in pacing and in characters, because you kind of have to fill those gaps. In general, real life does not work at the speed of an edited movie. And that's one of the reasons why these single take things are so difficult to achieve, because, you know, in a movie, you can have somebody get out of a car and then cut to them walking into a building. You can time compress and you can do flashbacks and you can bump ahead to scenes. You have to sustain the movie and you have to sustain the action, and you can't just kind of wander through a field for 20 minutes. That's the whole point, is these guys are walking across the countryside trying to get to the front line, and they're going over beautiful countrysides that look like they're at peace. They're going over to areas that are war-torn. They're going over areas that have enemy fire. There are places that have been blown up but are no longer in danger, and they encounter a lot of things. They're going through the trenches, and they emerge at one point out into a beach. So there's a whole lot of scenery in this movie and a whole lot of places that this happens. And that's, I think, what I found most impressive about how Sam Mendes put this together. Not necessarily the character development, although the characters are interesting and well done and also aren't big names. I mean, Colin Firth is in there like right at the beginning. There's a couple people that show up that are recognizable, but the main people in this movie are not big names, which is kind of a feat to really be getting notice and winning awards that way. And that's kind of what makes this movie really click, because any war film usually is going to have some big name actor in it. And then it's going to have these big explosive action scenes with sweeping cameras and big special effects, but they have to find a way to make it work from the ground, looking at it from two guys with guns just standing in a field. And they do a great job doing this. It's a realistic movie of World War II, and it shows you the horrors and the claustrophobia of trench warfare, but it also shows this juxtaposition of just beautiful areas, just gorgeous areas of Europe, right next to places getting decimated. And that's wartime. Wartime is beauty right next to carnage. And it works as a great, will they actually make their mission type movie? I think it's a really well done film. It's not my favorite of the year, but it certainly is worth checking out. It's worth seeing. 1917 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to talk about the next movie, which is Parasite. I don't have a trailer for it because it's in Korean. It's directed by Bong Joon-ho, who has done some movies that have made their way into American culture. Like, one of the ones that I think got the widest release, at least directly to the homes, was Okja. He did that movie with the Super Pigs in a couple of years ago for Netflix. But he's done other movies like The Host. He did Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer was in English, actually. So, he's worked not always in Korean, but he's a well-known Korean director. And Parasite is his latest film, getting a lot of buzz. It won the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Language Film. The basic plot of it is you have this low-class family that pretends to be high-class paid help, like tutors and drivers and high-class maids for a wealthy family, and it's their way of trying to sort of leech onto their wealth and sort of gain access to their lives. And there's a little bit more to it, and there's other layers to it. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Bong Joon-ho's work. I find his stuff interesting. In general, I like his films, but his films do kind of drag a bit for me. And that's something to be said about this one. Also, you can't go in hearing a name like Parasite, you can't go in expecting it to be a horror movie, because that's what I thought it was. Because he's done that kind of stuff before. I mean, he's worked in The Host was certainly a horror movie. Snowpiercer's a sci-fi movie. So he's done some shocking and revelating films. Now, what's interesting about this is when he won the Golden Globe, he had a big speech about getting past subtitles. And you see this quote being shown on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, where it's the quote from his acceptance speech, where he's like, once you get past that 1-inch barrier, you can see so many other films. And that's one of the things people complain about Americans, that they don't want to read subtitles. And I've always found that to be somewhat pretentious. You know, dub a movie. They've been dubbing movie for more than a century. Just dub the movies. I've never been one of those people, and this will make me break with a lot of cinephiles, where I do not think you need to have the original actor's words on there. Of course, part of the problem is, and I don't want to sound like a Luddite, but as you're reading the subtitles, you do miss action, and you got to kind of have to focus back and forth, and you can't just sort of like immerse yourself in the movie. I'm all for dubbing in movies, and if you insist on having subtitles, I think that's just as pretentious as insisting you'll never watch something with subtitles. But this movie's, it's interesting, and it has a lot of interesting things to say when it comes to class, and there's layers of human relationships and how things can turn on each other, and how you may be above one person in one respect, but then below in another, and how the tables can turn. So it does have these interesting reveals, but it's, I have to admit, it's not my favorite of his films. I think overall it's a decent movie, but I think it is overrated. Like my local organization, COFCA, the Columbus Film Critics Association, I think they gave it number one marks for the year, and I'm like, I don't think so. But that's just me. I'm one voter out of many. I'm still going to say that Parasite kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Like a Boss and Underwater. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the brand new films for the weekend. And the first one I want to hit is Like a Boss. Two women who have known each other since middle school work to save their cosmetics company from a corporate raider.
We've opened up our own store. We're winning.
We're $493,000 in debt.
Walk into the room.
Now pay to Mia Carter.
I'm Clara Luna.
I am going to invest $1.7 million on you.
We would love $1 million.
But in my experience, business and friendship don't always mix.
You don't have to worry. You're a pretty little head.
My head is not little. It's just that my breasts are humongous. If you want to be a businesswoman, you're going to have to act like a boss.
This is an interesting movie because I really feel certain levels of confliction with it. Because first of all, it's good to know this movie was not made for me. This is a girl's power movie. And not to say that I can't watch a girl's power movie. I mean, I'm all for that. I have nothing wrong with that. But this is clearly a movie that's meant to pass the Bechdel test with flying colors. If you don't know what the Bechdel test is, it's that whole thing where it challenges a movie to have more female-centric characters, and they have to, two female characters have to talk to each other at some point and not talk about a man. And that happens all the time, because in this movie, there's tons and tons of conversation. In fact, there are very few men in this movie at all. Salma Hayek, who's the corporate raider, she has an assistant, and it's a guy. And there are these other two guys who run a cosmetics company, competing cosmetics company. One of their assistants in their business is a guy, but pretty much that's it. It's mostly women, and that's all cool, but it is clearly not geared for somebody like me. I talked about this when I was talking about Little Women. You know, that movie was not named Big Fat Guy. Of course, if it was named Big Fat Guy, it would probably be on some weird website somewhere. But anyways, the film Like a Boss has these two women who are sort of like this startup cosmetics company, and they're played by Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne. And I have to say, the two of them work well together, because one of the things I remember what happened a year or two ago when they had a Night School, I think it was the one with Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish, they're comedy styles were way too close to each other, and they clashed, and you know, they weren't very much able to have any sort of chemistry, and that kind of caused that movie to be kind of not very good. This one, when it works because of the chemistry between the two characters. Not only do they look very different, but they have very different comedic styles. I mean, Tiffany Haddish is brash and kind of over the top, and Rose Byrne's a little more relaxed and soft spoken. And while she can be crazy, she does it in a very different way. They're very much a Laverne and Shirley pair, where they each can have their spotlight, but they're different spotlights, and it works better as a movie. Tiffany Haddish tends to have the funniest moments. She has the one-liners and the zingers that may have not been written for her, that she may have just come up with on set. Now, with that said, you know, the movie's pretty predictable. You know where it's going. You know what's going to happen. Salma Hayek's in it. She's playing the bad guy, but she's trying to be nice, and she's trying to rip their company out from under them because she wants to take it apart and use what she wants, and then leaves the rest for the dogs. I compliment them for not trying to shoehorn in some sort of romance or anything like that. They just are telling a story about two businesswomen who are fighting for their own company. Every now and then, AMC will do these things called Girls' Night Out screenings, and it's usually for a movie that's a girls' movie. The last one I remember them doing it for was The Spy Who Dumped Me, and I went to go see that. So here's this big fat guy showing up at this movie theater packed with women for Girls' Night Out. So I go into this theater, and, you know, they have all assigned seats now. So I showed up, like, right when the movie was starting, and these two women, and I'm like, you're in my seat. And the girls are like, what? Because there are a lot of empty seats. Fortunately, I had to make them move. I made these two women move because one of them was in my seat. And they were cool about it. They just moved a couple seats down, or actually found what their seats were, because then it did fill up. A lot of people ended up showing up within that first 10 minutes of the movie because they didn't have trailers. So everyone was expecting there to be trailers, so they came late. And then, so there's this empty seat next to me, and then this woman comes in, a very attractive woman, and comes in, a businesswoman, kind of classy, you know. And she comes in, she sits next to me, and I said to her, I go, well, you didn't miss much. If you've seen the trailer, you know what's coming up. She's like, oh, well, thank you. And you know, it's been a rough week for me, so I've been around the block a couple times this week. I didn't take my shower that afternoon. I probably should have. But this woman, she smelled like maple syrup. And you'd think that sounds weird, but I was so hungry. And I felt so weird. And then she like put like lotion on her hands. Then it had a nice like melon and fruit smell to it. Then she was eating candies. She had like peppermint candies. And I'm just like, oh my God, woman, you're destroying me here. I'm trying to watch this movie, and all I can think of are pancakes and maple syrup and melons and peppermint, you know. So then I fell asleep, and I feel bad because the movie was a little bit dull for me. But I fell asleep. And this is a routine thing that sometimes happens. Sometimes I get to the end of the week or middle of the week, and I'm so busy, I'm doing other stuff during the day, and the movie's not really taking my interest, and I'll doze off. So, look, lady, if you're listening to the show and you live in Columbus, Ohio, and you sat down next to some fat guy in the middle of a girls' night out screening who maybe smelled a little bit musty from not having showered that afternoon, and you smelled delicious, and then he snored through half the movie, my apologies. Anyways, I'm still going to say, even though this movie has some laughs, it's not completely for me, but I'm going to be nice and give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Underwater. Kristen Stewart headlines this horror flick about a group of workers at the bottom of the ocean facing a collapsing habitat and an invasion of mysterious, violent creatures.
Listen carefully. You are now 5,000 miles from land, and you're descending 7 miles to the bottom of the ocean. See you all in a month.
Here we go.
We drilled to the bottom of the ocean, and we don't know what came out.
Gotta get to the station.
How would we even get there?
We walk. We just gotta walk with insufficient oxygen across the bottom of the ocean.
We don't know what's out there.
I have several genres of sci-fi horror movies that I like, and one of the ones that is a go-to for me are people trapped in an environment with something dangerous around them. Generally, it's monster in a spaceship. You know, Alien is a great example of that kind of movie. There was a movie a couple of years ago called Life that really fits that mold. You can do it on the bottom of the ocean. The problem is there are these two movies, Leviathan and Deep Star 6 in the 80s, that were both just awful. And they kind of destroyed the monster in the habitat type thing. But you've had other movies like Deep Blue Sea or The Meg, which had the shark and the environment. So this was kind of neat, and it reminds me a little bit of the movie Sphere, if you remember that one, based on the Michael Crichton book that was made in the mid-90s. This is very straightforward. It's, you know, a bunch of people down to the bottom of the ocean. There's an earthquake. And the structure is compromised and it's collapsing around them. They're trying to get out. And then there's these monsters out there. They don't know what it is because they're at the bottom of the ocean and nobody's researched life down there. And they discover these creatures. My biggest problem with this movie, I had two huge problems. The first problem was the movie is so murky. And I get it. At the bottom of the ocean, it's not easy to see. There's no light when you're 6 miles below the surface. And there's a lot of debris and crap down there, but they put on some lights and it was just so hard to see anything. You couldn't really tell where the action was. And the other problem is they kind of treated these monsters that they kept seeing as more of an annoyance and an inconvenience than an actual bona fide threat, which I thought, first of all, was stupid. I mean, they're monsters on the bottom of the ocean. You want to be scared of that nonsense. But the other problem is that's what I found interesting. I wanted to know more about these monsters. I don't care if they're in a collapsing habitat. I'm not watching the Poseidon Adventure. I want to see people fighting monsters. And when they finally do reveal what the full extent of it is, it's kind of cool. But even then, they kind of dismiss it. It's sort of like, well, if we got to survive the collapsing environment, we can survive this thing. Kristen Stewart does a fine job as she falls into some of her Twilight tics that she's been trying to remove, but I forgive that mainly because she's really facing trauma in this movie, and I think that she could fall into that. But I didn't particularly care for the characters. I didn't care who lived or died, and there wasn't enough monster for your buck. It just was kind of disappointing. And at the end, I was just kind of like, that's it? It could have been so much better. So I'm going to have to say that Underwater kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing The Witcher, talk about the box office, and look at the home cinema roundup featuring Joker. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with a TV review. Here's the thing. I do cover TV now and then, but I don't have time to watch an entire season. And a lot of times, by the time you get a chance to watch the entire seasons, everyone else has had a chance to watch the entire season. So what's the point of doing a TV review if you're not doing it at least early on? Kind of here's my rule. I have friends who do TV. and they will watch TV nonstop, like in their sleep. They'll have like three screens going on and their phone and everything just because they got to keep up on all the episodes. I don't have time for that nonsense. I got movies to watch. You know, I've got, you know, mountains to climb and I've got stars to overcome and I've got Death Stars to blow up. So I am busy enough. I will watch three episodes of a series. That's kind of how I've learned over the years and watching enough series. I'll say I will give a TV show three episodes, but I am not going to be one of those people who comes in. They go, well, you know, the first three seasons are kind of rubbish, but boy, it really picks up in season four. I am not going to commit that much time just to maybe have a good show. So there needs to be something that catches me. And I know that certain shows are different than others. A sitcom is very different than a cop drama. You know, that's very different than some of these new shows that they're putting in binge watching ability. And granted, some of the shows are relatively short, but I'll give it three episodes. I'm prefacing it because of this, because I know everyone's going to be like, what, what? But it doesn't really pick up until like five or six or the final episode, episode eight. Okay, you can shut up now. And I'm talking about The Witcher, which came out right over Christmas. It was a big, huge hit to a lot of fans, people who read the books and people who like the fantasy stuff. And I figured this is something that's, I might as well start watching this, see what it's about, see if it's worth checking out. And in the series, Henry Cavill stars as a mutant monster hunter who crosses paths with magical creatures and fights for the future of their society.
You're a mutant. Created by magic. Roaming the continent.
We don't want your kind here.
Hunting monsters. For a price.
People call you a monster too. Why not kill them?
Because then I am what they say I am.
The reason why I pointed this out is because I've tried watching several series this year, and one of them in particular sticks out in my mind, and that is Carnival Row on Amazon. I watched three episodes of that. I still can't tell you what it's about. I mean, I can say, yeah, they got pixies and fairies, and they come from this world, and these folks come from this place, and, you know, they have the different castes of society, and you got the people who are wearing the Los Angeles Rams helmet with the horns and everything. But the bottom line, I couldn't figure out what the story was yet because it's all world building. And that's one of the problems you're seeing a lot in these shows, and especially the ones where you can binge watch, because they say, oh, well, you can just burn through three episodes and get to episode four when things start happening. But that's sloppy filmmaking. That's sloppy storytelling. If you can't make a series interesting from the first episode, or at least the second episode, then what the heck are you doing? You know, re-edit the show, plan your writing a little bit better. And that's my big problem with The Witcher. The Witcher has some interesting imagery. It has some interesting storylines going on, but it's got all these storylines. You watch the first episode and you're like, okay, I see what's going on. You got this princess and she's on the run and you've got The Witcher there and he's being manipulated by this guy. Then you get to the next episode and there's a brand new character and you're like, wait a minute. And I'm not just talking about introducing a new character that starts interacting. It's a whole nother story. And I'm like, okay. And I'm watching it. And then I get to the third episode. Brand new characters. Like, seriously. Slow down. If you cannot learn how to introduce your series and not seem to restart it with every episode, I can't even tell you what The Witcher's about. I mean, aside from that blurb that I did, but even then, that's a sloppy blurb because I don't know what that show's about. And it's just a bunch of people in castles talking to each other and kind of being boring. There's not even like the stuff that makes you want to watch a show like that. They do have a big, you know, the opening, the first episode has a big war that happens in it. But even then, there's no emotional connection to the people who are losing or suffering during the war because they haven't taken the time to characterize them. And you don't understand how everybody holds held together. And here's this Witcher, this guy who supposedly goes and hunts monsters. He hunts monsters in the first scene and that's it. You don't see him hunting any more monsters for a while. And that's the problem with the show. And as I even understand, it bounces around time-wise too and doesn't give you an idea. That's just sloppy filmmaking. If you have to read the existing books to understand what's going on, you've done a bad job making a series. So I'm going to have to say The Witcher kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office really quick. I mean, the only thing that really happened last week is you had, of course, the Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, once again won the box office. It's not going to win this weekend, mainly because you got too much stuff coming out. 1917 is probably going to take the box office. But yes, Star Wars came out number one again last weekend with about $35 million, and it's dropping evenly with the Last Jedi. The only difference between this release and both The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens is they had an extra week until Christmas kicked in. So they burned off their box office slower, but while they had a different drops, they had a little bit more time for people on vacation. But still, Rise of Skywalker is going to be well over $1 billion. It's still a huge moneymaker for Disney. And honestly, I have to say the low box office for The Rise of Skywalker compared to the other two has more to do with the fact that you had a lot of people who were annoyed and cheesed off with The Last Jedi. And I said that about Solo. It's not The Last Jedi's box office. It's the next one that suffers the most. So you're going to see the same thing with Jurassic World. You had the first Jurassic World, which was a massive hit. Then you had the second Jurassic World, which did well, but kind of stunk. And the next Jurassic World movie is going to struggle to live. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is going to be on Warner Brothers' Joker. Joaquin Phoenix stars as a disturbed man who develops a criminal persona that will eventually become the nemesis of Batman.
Gotham's lost its way. What kind of coward would do something that cold-blooded? Someone who hides behind a mask.
I used to think that my life was a tragedy. But now I realize it's a comedy.
This movie has really grown on me. I remember when I first saw it, I had to go to Cleveland to see it because they didn't screen it in my hometown. And I remember leaving the theater and I said to the rep, she asked what I thought. And I go, well, I can't say I enjoyed it. Because it's a disturbing movie to watch. Not just because of some violence that happens in it. It's disturbing because you're taken on this journey into madness with this guy. And I didn't quite know what to expect when I saw it. So you find yourself feeling empathy, but you don't like him. You can feel sorry for him and you can identify him, but that doesn't mean that you feel good about what happens to him. And it's a real tragic movie. It's a fantastic movie and it's worth rewatching. I've rewatched it and it has much greater rewatch value than a lot of films because there are layers and there's a lot going on with Joaquin Phoenix's performance. And one of the things I found interesting about the rewatch of it was you got a real sense of what his problem is. And his problem is he has a soul. And it's only when he loses his soul that he has the ability to be happy. He struggles to be happy through the entire movie and is depressed and has all these issues and problems and inability to relate. But once he sheds his soul, he can be happy. He can be himself. And that's kind of terrifying because we all know there are people out there like that. But yes, The Joker's fantastic. The Blu-ray looks great. It's a little thin on special features, I gotta say. There's a couple behind it. There's like a costume test and there's a behind the scenes thing. The one thing I found the most interesting piece of bonus material is they have his appearance on the Robert De Niro TV show that he's doing. And they edit together all the different takes of how Joaquin Phoenix came out or talked to the guests or talked to the host. And it's all over the map. He doesn't do the same thing twice. And it's a fascinating look at all the options that they had. And this had to have been a murder to edit because at some point you had to pick one and there are so many interesting ways he comes out. So even though it's a little thin on special features, I got to say Joker and the subsequent Blu-ray totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Other releases out this week are my favorite movie of 2019, The Lighthouse, plus Primal, The Shed, and The Depraved. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Bad Boys for Life, and Doolittle. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.